On episode 90 of the Mini PC Show, we talk about a failing Atomic Pi first boot, Mozilla Web Things, Intel dedicated graphics, and around minute 55, we lose our normal audio and switch over to YouTube. Hope it turns out good, folks, this week on Mini PC Show. Hey, Pod Dunkins, welcome to the Mini PC Show, episode 90. This show is brought to you by our Patreon, William Gale. He's been an active Patreon since 11/11, November the 11th, 2017. Thank you very much for all your support. This is a show all about mini computers, single board computers, Raspberry Pi, micro devices, whatever you want to call it. Basically, the tagline of the show is big talk, little machines. And when we talk about machines, we're talking about all kinds of computing devices, whether it be Raspberry Pis, Banana Pi Pros, Jetsons, Minis, or any other of the mini computing devices. The best thing about the mini computing ecosystem is more and more and more come out each and every day. And when I say each and every day, I literally mean each and every day. First thing I'd like to mention on the show is this show started with a great amount of help from a good friend, Eric R. Ardini. He has passed away almost a month ago now. We have a GoFundMe set up to try to help his family through the transition of life after Eric. The link will be in the notes. I'll make sure it's in the notes. And if you can, I will ask you, please suspend supporting Podnuts for 1, 2, 3 months, 6 months, whatever, and go support Eric's family with their ordeal. I will say we definitely do have some emails this week. I am very bad, typically, about catching up on all the emails. Let me do a quick scroll back through. And I know we had at least a couple. I know we had a brand new one literally just come in the gate. And it was more than a couple people reminding me, making sure I knew about, making sure I was aware of a newer device out there, which we actually have brought to the show at least a couple times. It's called the Atomic Pi. Basically, came out this week. When I say came out this week, it was made available to purchase on Amazon and on Digital Logger's website. I will say they did a very, as far as I'm concerned, critical flaw for the non-hardcore single board computing fan, and that is they did not make it utterly clear in any of their advertisements that it did not come with a power supply, and you had to make sure you either purchased the geniusly named small adapter board for 2.5 millimeter power supply, or you had to have, what, as far as I'm concerned, a very unique wall wart to what they keep calling, I believe it was Dolby cables, which is very reminiscent of the old IDE cable stream. I did post a video on YouTube yesterday, I believe. I basically went through an unboxing and an opening, and I was really hoping it did come with a power supply, and I would be able to boot it up for the first time and play with it, but alas, I can unbox it and look at it. And forget to change my RGB around, so my hand was blue a little bit. So we were able to at least look at the board. I was not able to power it up yet. I did go on Amazon and buy a solution. I do not want to damage the board, so I want to do as little hacking involved in getting it up and running as possible. Everybody from long-term guys like 5150, Captain Zero, and more than a couple other people did let me know about it. Here's an example of one from Greg. Greg's another longtime Podnut supporter. Basically just says, I stumbled across this. A Atomic Pi looks interesting. It's a huge SBC, and it seems like it may require an additional breakout board. Well, that's one of their terminology failures. They have the power board, then they have a breakout board. The breakout board looks awesome. The breakout board makes it to be much more of a full-fledged home automation type computing system with camera interfaces and all other kinds of interfaces. That was a separate breakout board. Just the normal Atomic Pi board also, I will say, is what I consider to be a fantastic price of around $35. Super hard to beat, an Intel-based board for $35. I really wish it came with a power supply. That would definitely make it much better, much easier to deal with. Even if you got the adapter board, it only brought it up to $39. So it was only four extra dollars for the power board. And I wish I would have known that. I would have happily paid the four extra dollars for that power board. So instead, I'm going to wait a couple days for my Amazon order to come in with the extra hardware so I can power it up. Okay, yeah, here's the email from 5150. 5150 is a very long time PodNut supporter, and I have seen him at more than a couple conference events this year. For the last 2 years, I've been very conference light, so I haven't had a chance to see him. But he basically sent an email in, just watching you and Rich talk about the Atomic Pi and taking the piss out of you because I don't have one. Oh, so he's a little bit upset I have one. Just watch out that you don't get blue goop on your face. I forgot to swap the RGB, so my hands looked blue, and the USB 3 socket is blue. It looked green. So I got to get a little bit better at setting up my cameras and stuff whenever I do these kinds of live streams. There is at least one more email in here I know of. I did not do a good job of tagging them. Part of the reason why I don't read a lot of my emails ahead of time is so they're marked as unread. So when I get ready to do the show, they're very easily stick out at me. So if I don't answer email, let me assure you, it's probably because I would rather talk about it live on the show. Okay. I did make sure I had that link in the show notes already. The next one I wanted to talk about was something actually Rich intended on bringing up the last episode, but we both completely forgot about it. Pine64 is one of the companies that we really do feel very bullish about. We really do like what they're doing so far. Every single board company is doing a really bad job in naming their products, like the Intel-based board called the Atomic Pi. When people hear Atomic Pi, they think ARM-based device. It's an Intel-based device, so I don't think they did a good job in naming that. Pine has had their own issues with naming and stuff, but when it comes to the technology, these companies are doing really good stuff. Now, here's the link that we meant to bring, and it's the Pine64 plans to move their entire website infrastructure onto a 24-node Rock Pro 64 cluster. And then they have a glorious picture showing all the boards basically lined up in a cluster. And just a reminder, the Rock Pro 64 is a ARM Cortex A72, 188 Cortex A53 cores. So it's basically like 96 cores of one type of processor, 188 cores of another kind of processor, as well as a total of 192 gigabytes of RAM. There's absolutely no doubt in my mind that they did everything in their power to make sure that everything was completely tested before they actually decided to put this into an active environment. This is really awesome. To me, this is what I call traditional dog fooding, when a company actually has the gumption to follow through and not only sell a product, but use a product as their actual piece of hardware in their infrastructure. Hey, Rich.
Hey, buddy. How are you? Long time no see.
I'm doing pretty good. Definitely hearing a echo there. Only when you talk. Yeah, this is the kind of thing. And I will say I am still using my Rock Pro 64. I'm literally like taking three different computers to work. It depends on four different computers, technically. Depends on how I feel in the morning. Sometimes I take the original Asus Chromebook Flip. Sometimes I take my Lenovo 430 laptop. Sometimes I take my Odroid H2 Intel-based board. And then sometimes I take my Rock Pro 64. The Rock Pro 64 has gotten plenty of updates in the last couple of weeks, but it still does not play video, I'll say nicely, but I can see in a server environment, the Rock Pro 64 being quite adequate.
Love the idea that they're crapping where they eat or dog fooding or however. No, it's not crap. It's dog fooding.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of my core beliefs about anything you do. If you dog food, it's always going to end out to be a better product. And the example I use is podcasting. I subscribe to every single podcast on podnuts.com and listen to everything just because it's dog fooding. If it's not good enough for me to listen to, it's not good enough for the network. And I know when like another podcast does not dog food their own content, because when they publish a show and then it turns out they made an error in their naming of the MP3 file or something, and then I have to contact them for 3 straight days repetitively asking them to please fix their feed, please fix their feed. If you don't dog food, you know, basically quality goes down. And I don't know if it's a true story or not. Do you know where the actual term dog fooding came from?
Well, I had always assumed it was the dog food industry.
Yeah, literally Purina dog food, which is the old checker box, red and white checkerboard pattern. I believe they were in Pennsylvania, just north of here. Supposedly, the people then said, if it isn't good enough for me to eat, it's not good enough for my dog to eat. So they would literally once in a while taste test the food, and that's where the phrase dog food came from. It sounds legit.
Sounds legit to me. I don't want to be a CEO of that company then, especially when the company's buying lunch.
Well, I don't mind being this CIO. I'm just not going to work on the line kind of thing. I'm pretty sure if I smelled that food all day, I would come home and not be very hungry at all.
That's like when I worked at Kentucky Fried Chicken when I was in high school. I'd come home smelling like chicken.
Gotcha. Line 913 on the notes, Rich. This is the kind of thing that I am very happy has happened, is what I'm going to say. Raspberry Pi, if anyone's listened to this show for any length of time, you've heard us wane and wax about Raspberry Pi. Because if it wasn't for Raspberry Pi, none of these things would exist as we see them now. At the same token, they've held the industry back, as far as I'm concerned, a great deal since they've came out. But basically, the UK has decided to make commemorative stamps, and they asked for 6 British engineering products to be on a stamp, and the Raspberry Pi was one of the things selected. And I'll just say,
very cool.
Yeah, because here's my firm belief. It doesn't matter the way we look at anything today, okay? When history is written, it's always going to be looked at through a different set of glasses, if you will. I honestly believe the Raspberry Pi will be seen as a true innovation in computing, only because with the push of the technology, with the push of the infrastructure to make all these Raspberry Pis and all these single board computers, helped phones along, but it also helped satellites along a well, you know, as much as well. So the fact that they got themselves on a stamp, I think, is a very nice, dare I say, like a tip of the hat.
So I'm guilty of this just as anybody, and I do definitely have, if you count Pi zeros, more Raspberry Pi type devices around me than any other. But then again, you could put, you know, 2 dozen Raspberry Pi zeros in your pocket. Plus, at $5 a piece, it's pretty easy to do. So the good and the bad about the Raspberry Pi, which we talk about often, we've gotten mail. It's like, why are you hating on the Raspberry Pi? It's like, yeah, I'm not really hating on it. I'm just saying it's a good entry level. It's done great things for the single board computing industry. Because as I've kind of spied on useful, or, you know, kind of dipped a toe in the pool looking at this stuff over 30 years, any kind of single board computer was brutally expensive, and it was x86 based for the most part. So there was no way, like, Dor, you probably remember when there were no MP3 players and when CD changers were the rage in your car, that people were figuring out ways of putting PCs in their car and having some control unit on the dash.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I don't want to say they were hackery, but it was literally like you had to almost design it from scratch and put it all together, and you were worrying about like hitting bumps in the car and it, you know, hurting the actual hard drive because it was a spinning disc. There were a lot of things you had to worry about.
You know, now people are doing actually the same thing with a Raspberry Pi. They're putting a touchscreen display in their car, and they're having a Raspberry Pi in the background. And there's even distros for cars, you know, Raspberry Pis in cars. So there's definitely cool stuff out there. I think it's a success in many ways. It's not a success in performance. It's a success in price, or the price performance point, yes. It's a success in creating an entire market or genre that people, you know, what do they say? The sincerest form of flattery. I'm butchering it. Copy. It's not copying. It's something like copying is the sincerest form. It is whatever sincerest form of flattery is copying of some sort. I forget what the actual phrase is. People are yelling at the podcast right now. Is it crazy successful? Well beyond? Absolutely. Is it the thing I'm? I can talk about this. This is public. VMware is giving to their TAMs. That's the technical something managers. I forget. Like if you're running VMware, you should, if you're a decent sized shop that's running VMware, you should have a TAM. And basically he's kind of like a tech guru that comes in. You have weekly meetings with them and stuff like that. They just recently gave all of their TAMs a micro SD card. Do you know what's on it?
That illicit operating system for the Pi.
So it's ESXi. So their virtualization host for a Raspberry Pi. So when I read that, I fired off a letter to my TAM. I'm like, hey, you got an image you can share with me? Apparently, it's just been released to the TAMs, and it's not for public yet. And I have no special access, so I haven't gotten anything. So
that means
my hope
on, like, BitTorrent by tomorrow.
Could be. I do have a number of Pis that I could run stuff on, so I'd be very excited to do it and set up an ESXi Pi cluster. But realistically, what I want to be able to do is on something like my 4 gigabyte of RAM Odroid N2, run an ESXi host on machines that I have that are in the 4 gig range and slightly more powerful ARM CPUs. Because I'm going to dovetail into another topic here. We were talking about Mozilla IoT project, because I don't have any IoT stuff with me here at the Orlando Outpost, but at the Southern Command, I'm full IoT. And I would love to be able to, and the problem with the good and the bad part of something like a Raspberry Pi is to boot that operating system, you have to shove a micro SD card into a slot. So if I was able to do this virtually, I would be able to VPN into my home network and, you know, set up a guest OS with the Mozilla IoT and give it a test drive. And then I could report on it on the show right now. But
well,
I'm not.
You don't have to boot to SD card on Raspberry Pi. You can boot to USB or network. But it isn't something you can set up completely remotely. If you had it set up already, then you could literally just change the network side of it and then just say reboot and it would boot off the network to a different operating system. I believe all it is a specially formatted SD card that basically says, it basically passes the boot off. So it still technically boots the SD card, but then it passes it to either the network or to a USB drive.
Typically that would be what's called a TFT boot.
Gotcha, yeah. And this Mozilla IoT thing, web things, okay? This is not new at all, but this is completely rebranded. They had this for at least 4 or 5 months, and it's been incredibly hokey, is what I want to say, and nondescript. But in the last like 2 months, they did a rebranding. They've done basically a refactoring of all the code, and now it's called Mozilla Web Things. But if you go to the main website, iot.mozilla.org, it really doesn't do a very good job, in my opinion, of communicating anything that's going on in Mozilla IoT. If you just YouTube search Web Things Mozilla, you'll see a 2-hour presentation from like 2 months ago where the lady goes through everything about it. And it gives you an unbelievable, in-depth, detailed description of how everything works. I only got like 40 minutes through it. Here's the gimmick. You load the operating system on the Pi. The operating system is basically the gateway. They call it a gateway. Why do they call it a gateway? Because they're Mozilla and they have to be different. Nobody calls it a gateway. Everybody calls it a hub because that's what it is. It's a hub. It's not a gateway. Okay. You load the Raspberry Pi with Web Things hub, aka gateway, and then you basically connect it to all your other devices, and then you have a pretty web GUI interface in order to automate things, control things, manipulate things, and you can then port forward it out to the public internet. Now, the gimmick is every single bit of processing is first and foremost done on the local device. The only time it connects to anything outside of itself is when you go out of your way to set it to communicate with Twitter, if this, then that, or some other infrastructure. Even the voice commands are all processed locally, which that to me is the most interesting part. It is still basically new. I'm looking forward to seeing how people use it. I'm looking forward to it growing and becoming better, but for right now, it's still kind of immature.
So to me, it looked, some of what they did looked like Node-RED, and so a lot of the functionality overlaps with Node-RED and Home Automation Assistant or any of these open source home hubs or super hub. I don't know what you want to call it, but the thing I like about third party devices is they're not beholden to one ecosystem. And this is open source. You can have multiple different devices working on it and talking with it. So that's pretty cool. At first, when I saw this, I was like, yeah, why would I want their gateway? Because I'm thinking gateway goes to them. And then when I saw that there was a Pi image for it, I'm like, whoa, I mean, I can have this all. My goal is to have everything on my own network and nothing phones home. Everything stays on my network. Because you have an internet down and you can't open your garage door or you can't turn on a light. That really sucks.
Yeah. I'm okay with things accessing the internet, but I want it to access the internet when I tell it to access the internet. I don't want it to do it for everything. Here is another one, Rich, in the notes. It's 914. I don't even know how to pronounce it. DOMOTICZ. Domoticize. Domotiz. I don't know.
I don't know if it's a play on domicile.
I think you're on something. Yeah. Well, in short, what I'll say is this is another alternative to homeassistant.io. Now, here's the whole gimmick. We're just going to, okay. Right now, no doubt, hands down, bar none, the number one most flexible, functional, feature-rich home automation platform is homeassistant.io. Period. Web things, I'm sure, will grow to be really good. And this one, I will say, has some good features on it. And what I want is competition. And it looks like these people are trying to compete with homeassistant.io. And they do tout that this is first and foremost open source, where Home Assistant doesn't tout that up front, but they do mention it. So I do like the idea of this one. It does have, you know, complete downloadable source code, a complete manual PDF. It actually looks like it's well documented, which I will say seems to be rare, in my opinion, in a lot of the open source stuff that I look at. So that was a pleasant surprise to see. So this is just another one of those things. If you want home automation, but you want something that meets your personal needs, this might be worth checking out.
Does it run on a Pi or ARM? Or
I believe if you go to download, ARM 32-bit Raspberry Cube board, ARM 64-bit Cube board, Odroid, Windows, Mac, or Linux. And now, just real quick rewind. We're talking about the VMware stuff available for Raspberry Pi. This Raspberry Pi Cube board, Odroid 2. Here's what I'm finding with all of the software that I've been looking at, Rich, for all of this stuff. There is never an easy way to just look at a piece of software and say, is it going to run on this board? You know what I mean? Now, if you have a Raspberry Pi, the answer is always yes, because it's a Raspberry Pi. That's why you buy a Raspberry Pi, so you ain't got to worry about that. But if you have an Odroid, or you have a Rock, or you have a Rock Pro, or you have something else, a QB board or a QBox or whatever, you never know. All you can do is download the basic form of Debian you can find that is similar to it and then try to install it. It really comes down to which libraries does the application support and are they the correct versions? Because in Windows, you download an application, it downloads all supporting files most of the time. On Linux, it tries to do the exact opposite most of the time. It only downloads the core function executable files and all the supporting libraries it expects to have on the operating system. So with that VMware ESXi server, it might have stuff to where you just can basically copy it to nearly any ARM board and it could just run. Or it could be coded in such a way and structured in such a way, you'll never get it to run on anything except for a Raspberry Pi. You know, there's no way to know. So I'm happy when I see projects like this support other boards than a Raspberry Pi. When I see them support other things than a Raspberry Pi, to me, that's a sign that they're confident in their ability to keep up. Because, you know, it's easy to write code and publish it. It's really difficult to write code for 6 or 8 different hardware platforms and keep them constantly updated.
Yeah.
Yeah. There was another piece of software I wanted to talk about, Rich, and it's all like coming around. It's all like coming around downtown. And let me see if I can find it. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. 904. Okay. I've actually mentioned this application already one time this past week worth of shows is what I want to say. And I mentioned it on Android App Addict because there is an associated Android app with this project, but it's called Freedom Box. The only way I can put this is I have been talking about Freedom Box for maybe 10 years. I know it's been 9 years because I can literally go back on podmas.com, go into the search box, type in Freedom Box, all one word, and it goes back to an episode of Linux for the Rest of Us in 2011. That's when I first started talking about Freedom Box. So they've been around a long time, which is a good thing, but it's not a great thing, is what I'll say. Okay, what Freedom Box tries to be, it tries to be a personalized home server that enables you to be an administrator of your data. Think of it almost like Nextcloud or Dropbox, but you install Freedom Box on a local computer. It can be on a Windows, Mac, or Linux. It can be in a VM or it can be real. It can be in a Docker or be outside of a Docker. Or they have custom versions for Raspberry Pis and other micro boards like that. You install this Freedom Box on there. And really, all Freedom Box is, it's like a software repo. You load it up and you just have choices of things you can install. You can install Mumble. You can install WordPress-like content management systems. You can install document editing tools. But it's intended to be shared on your LAN with other users on your LAN or displayed publicly as a website. So hypothetically, I have an instance set up. If Rich hits my public-facing side of my Freedom Box, he'll get more of a presentation interface for visitors. So I could have blog showing content. I can have my Mumble instance surface so they can connect to it. I can have all these things pushed to the public side, but then I have my administration side. And then the Android app, you can do administration from it, but you can also connect to other Freedom Box instances. So think of it, instead of going to Facebook and going to other people's pages to view them, you would go to other people's Freedom Boxes to get to see their pictures, to see their baby pictures, to get their status updates kind of thing. But you can also go there to connect with voice communication software or word collaboration type software all in one. The downside is nothing about this is super easy. The downside about this is it's been around for 10 years. They've made significant progress, but I don't think, to be honest, they've made enough progress in 10 years. So the real reason I'm saying this is I want people to look at it. I want people to check it out. And if they think it's cool, offer support. They need help getting stuff, keeping upgraded and updated. And here's the, for instance, if you go to their regular website, which is freedombox.org, and you click on download, they list Raspberry Pi 2 as a downloadable. They don't even mention Raspberry Pi 3 when if you go to their GitHub, clearly there's a Raspberry Pi 3 download right there. So they need a little bit of help, they need a little bit of support. And if you go to Freedom Maker, which is basically a fork of, it's part of their product project, you can then go and you can see, you can download and you can build this for a whole bunch of different pieces of hardware, a whole bunch of different infrastructures, BeagleBone, QB Board, Banana Pro, Dream Plug, Raspberry Pi 2, 3, disk image for 386, 64-bit, VirtualBox, QEMU, PC Duo. And then if you keep scrolling down, you can see there's a whole bunch of things you can like build directly for, build right against, and basically make your own version of the software. So it is getting maturity behind it. It is taking a little bit of time for it to get maturity behind it, but I love the idea.
So is there some sort of federation? Like if I set up a Freedom Box and does it allow me to discover you, or you have to send me an invite?
I'll say what I believe. I have loaded it up in a VM just to play with it. But what I believe is There is no Federation purposefully, because that would mean that there is some kind of master control server. There's some kind of server outside of your control that it's communicating with.
Mm-hmm.
I do think that someone is working on a system to where you can load an applet onto your Freedom Box, and then it will list you in a list server, but that's not done yet. For right now, I would have to give you my address, you would have to give me your address, and then we could link our servers together kind of thing, but it's not incredibly easy is what I'll say.
Sure, I'm not sure how old and ancient you are, but do you remember BBSs and FidoNet?
Yep, and I remember Gopher and Sailor and all that stuff.
Archie and Veronica?
Yeah.
Okie doke. All right, yeah, because I've often wondered, I've thought about FidoNet a lot recently, because TCP/IP doesn't deal with latency really well. And NASA is doing things, and they're having interplanetary Ethernet, but they've got to change the protocol. So it's got to be more like FidoNet to actually work. FidoNet isn't a time-based, it's a, why am I losing the word? It's not a real-time type thing, it's a asynchronous, that's it, asynchronous. So back in the day when you dialed somebody's house that had like 9 phone lines, there were chat boards, and you could see a catalog of files, and you could request a file. And it's kind of like the bark around the world. The file may not be one phone call away from that server. It may be 10 phone calls away. Like, I might be dialing in on New York but want something from a California server. Well, in so many days, it would get there, and you know, I'd make the request, and then that file would show up there, and that's how it would work.
Yeah, I do remember hearing this, and it was like a question of hops. It was mm-hmm. like you had to have a protocol with a built-in expectation of latency, because you would have to literally wait for something to hop to the next node and then hop to the next node, where it literally could be minutes or hours or days.
And this typically was based on back when you had long distance charges, like back in the day, calls were free in your neighborhood, you know, probably at a 15-mile radius. Calls outside that were, it was some other thing. I forgot what it was called, but they charge you for that. And then calls outside of your county or counties away or out of state were at a different rate. And those rates would all be published in the phone book. And so at night, when the rates dropped really low, these BBS systems would dial each other and transfer files.
Right. And I do remember with NASA, part of it was, the question was, where is the satellite when it's at its closest point is when you can send the most data. That's when, you know, you can send the things that weren't critically important. But when things were farther away, that's when, if it wasn't critically important, you would be put on the back burner, because these other more high priority things had to go through. This is where something like net new neutrality can't exist on these kind of networks. You have to have prioritization, or else you're going to have worthless stuff possibly superseding something literally life critical.
So I forget how many minutes away a round trip is to Mars. I don't know if it's 8 minutes there and 8 minutes back, and then it depends on what time of year.
Right.
So you might want a driving instruction to go to a rover, like, hey, don't go over that cliff. And the photos it took yesterday, you might not care if you get them today or next week.
Yeah, it depends where Mars is at in its orbit, we're at in our orbit, and which direction we're going, because we're either getting closer or further, and yeah, it's not good. And I want to say their day is almost as long as their year, which then means you can't go typically directly to the planet. You can only go to the satellite around the planet, and then it is not easy. It is definitely complicated. Now, here's a real quick tangent, Rich.
We're not on a tangent already?
Oh, we're always on a tangent. One of the emails I got from 5150 was, it was about the Atomic Pi. And he was like, you know, because now Google Plus isn't around, it isn't easy to keep up with you and, you know, share these things with you. Okay. I'm guessing this is coming to my frontal lobe because I'm turning old. Here's my logic. I'm not going to invest any time, any material, any content, or any mind computation time at all in a system that I don't have confidence. If I right now drop into a coma and I wake up in 10 years and I'm not 100% confident it's going to still exist, I don't want to invest any time in it. I don't care if it's MeWe. I don't care if it's Facebook. I don't care if it's Twitter. I don't care if it's Mastodon. I don't care if it's Social GNU. I don't care if it's any of these things. I'm not going to put any time into them. I will say I'm very confident IRC is still going to be around.
I guess so.
Yeah, so part of me is thinking I'm looking at trying Matrix. Or, you know, we have a Mattermost server. We technically control that. It costs money every month to keep it up and running. So that's one of the differences between that and IRC. IRC, you know, the cost is spread out, you know, all around the world, and it ain't going anywhere anytime soon. Where if I want to keep my Mattermost instant up, it costs me money every month. But I was looking at Riot.io, which was which has in it the Matrix. It's called messaging protocol, which is one of those things that even the NSA uses. It's so secure kind of thing. But it also allows you to have channels in the chat server, which are IRC channels. So I'm not joining MeWe ever because, listen, if anyone wants to know why I'm not joining MeWe or Mastodon or whatever, watch The Cleaners. If you need a copy of it, ping me. I got it on my Plex server. You can watch it. Once a platform gets so much girth behind it, it has no choice. But it's going to draw the eyeballs of governments and the attention of governments, which will cause the government to want to manipulate the environment and change it and regulate it, which means MeWe, if it gets popular enough, will fall under control outside of itself. And that's just, you know, so I'm not going to invest any time in it, you know. I'm not a critical investor. If I was a critical investor, I would have say on what its future is. I'm not just going to be a user. So I don't know. If somebody finds something better, I definitely ask you to let me know. Hey, Brian.
Hey, Jor. How you doing?
Normal craziness. How's everything going on your end?
Things are going pretty good, actually. I'm trying to figure out how I can turn my audio down on the video chat here. But I was listening to your explanations of reasons why you're not, you know, going to be joining the various multitude of social media platforms out there. And your argument's very compelling, I have to say.
Well, and it doesn't hurt the fact that there's jerks everywhere you go. I mean, this is like high school all over again. There's no such thing as, you know, a kid going to high school and having the perfect year and the perfect classes and the perfect friendships. There's always going to be jerks abound, and that's with any social media platform as well. And I didn't want to go to school as a kid, so I don't want to hang out in, you know, social platforms either. I honestly completely forgot to say, Rich, anything new in the hardware realm since we last had a show, which I want to say was almost 3 weeks?
Well, nothing real new, and I think you already talked about it. So you did talk about the Atomic Pi already, correct?
Yeah, well, that's what I got. I don't know about you.
Oh, well, I got the N2, so I got that running here, and I threw a beta version of DietPi on it, and for those of you that don't remember the N2, it's the Odroid N2, it's got HDMI, Gig Ethernet, 4 USB 3.0 ports on it, and of course I got the 4 gig version. I used it. I had a problem with my Odroid HC1's hard drive, so I got a new hard drive and I plugged both into it and I copied all of my files for my Plex server from one to the other, and that was just fantastic. Having a device that, one, I don't have to carry around with me because, you know, my laptops I run around with. So my normal complement of folding devices, not phones, is my work laptop, my MacBook Pro, and my Chromebook. And depending on what's going on, I grab them and I take them with me. So if I'm doing a multi-hour copy that may happen before, after, during, or while I'm on work, or go longer than the time I'm away at work, I want to do it on something that's on my desk and not moving. So that was really nice. The DietPi beta doesn't have super drivers yet out for the video card on it, but, and I say card meaning chip, the GPU. But it should be getting better. So that's, I guess, like any new board out there, you get them, they're going to get better, or there's going to be better support for them in the future.
Gotcha, gotcha. Now, this N2 is the board that more than a couple people did reviews on, and they gave it like benchmarks test boards on how well they perform on benchmarks, nothing else. It's like, you know, if you take a car on a straightaway racetrack, you know, like a drag strip, and run it there, those numbers are not going to match the numbers you get on your local streets because everything's different, okay? But with that said, the benchmarks for that device, even though it's almost $80 for the 4 gig version, I want to say, $82.
I think totally out the door with the 4 gigs, the case, shipping, I think it was in the 115 range, you know, shipping tax, the whole shoot match. I'd have to look back at my email for that. But I can't tell you performance because I really haven't done anything performance-wise with it other than SSHing into it. What I can tell you that I'm happy about is it runs cooler than my HC1. Yeah, so maybe I'm not taxing it a whole lot, but definitely idle on the N2 versus my HC1. It's definitely running cool, so I'm very happy about that. I got to figure out what I want to do with it. I hate to say it, I was all excited to get it. Now I'm like, now what to do with it? But again, if I could run Docker, or, you know, that's one of the things I loaded up is Docker, so I could just deploy stuff to it. I'd love to run, you know, ESXi on it or something. I'll tell you what the cool thing was I was thinking about doing is if I ran 3 instances of Docker Ceph and plugged 3 different hard drives into it, I would have a, you know, virtualized or Dockerized Ceph node. So I was thinking that would be kind of cool.
And real quick question. This is the board that basically the entire base of it is a heatsink. So when you say it isn't running, it's hot. I hope not with a heatsink that big.
Yeah, but the HC1 is all a heatsink also.
Oh, that's true. Okay. Now, I will say you bought the case, and to me, this is one of the very few, very, very, very few single board computers where you buy the case, and the case isn't a case. The case is a lid, essentially. But you put the lid on the box and it looks like it's supposed to be there. It looks like it fits correctly, and it looks like if you had it sitting on your desk at work, somebody would think it's a complete solution and not some, you know, like I have boards sitting on boxes in mine.
Yeah. If you go to, I'm going to plug my site. If you go to flyingrich.com, I have a picture up there of it. It's just a like tinted box, and I'm pointing at it. So here's my big gripe with it right now. And if this is my biggest gripe with something, you know, I'm a real whiner, or, you know, there's a lot of good in it. My big gripe with it, if you go to flyingrich.com, you'll see my index finger pointing at where the micro SD card is. Well, they put a notch in the case for the micro SD card, but I don't know if it's American fingers or human fingers, but your index finger can't reach in there and pull that out. Maybe your pinky finger can, but if they don't have room on the left because there's an IR sensor, but on the right, they have more room. They could have widened it up a little bit. So you could get a finger in there and get the micro SD card in and out a little easier.
Gotcha. Well, I hope you find a use for it, is what I'll say, because, you know, that's what we all try to search for.
Like I said, any of these newer machines with all of this processor power and RAM, I'm thinking Docker or, you know, virtualization host. That's my, you know, end goal for these devices.
Gotcha. Hey, Brian, do you have any, you haven't been on for, I want to say, 5 weeks. So is there anything new in the mini computer world or something that like really caught your eye and something that you think that you have to play with?
I wouldn't say anything that's kind of really jumping out at me, but the Atomic Pi I thought was very interesting. Being the fact that it's an x86 chipset, and you can actually run things like PFSense and what was the other router OS platform? It's like the firewall platforms that you get from Linux. Gosh, it's right on the tip of my tongue. But anyways, I thought that was really cool because it allows you to install things like that on a small package. But what I was really taken back by it, and your unboxing that you had just yesterday, the fact that it has 2 gigs of RAM. And Rich, you just mentioned, the hardware that you're working with has 4 gigs of RAM. And I'm like, you know, it's 2019. I think at this point in time, we should be seeing at minimum 4 gigs, maybe 8 gigs of RAM, just so it gives you a lot more room to do things, you know? I don't know what you guys are thoughts on that.
$35, I think, is a steal. If it was more and you got like 4 gigs or 8 gigs, I'd be happy to pay more. And I think that's a great foot in the door. And definitely the pfSense is one of the things I would love to run on that I could have something out the door after I buy a USB 2 gig Ethernet adapter. For under $50, I could be running a pfSense box that was as big as a sandwich.
Yeah, I will say, first off, Brian, I love the fact that you said, come on, this is 2019. I've been saying that literally almost all of 2019. The operating system you were talking about, I'm sure, was untangled.
Yes, that's it. Thank you.
Okay, now, really quick fake ad. You know, people tell you on other podcasts how you should go to Capterra because you need to know what your choices are when it comes to software. Well, I encourage you never go to Capterra because if they can afford enough money to buy ads all over the world, that means they are getting a lot of value out of you and giving you nothing back in return. Alternative2.net has been around 10 times longer than Capterra, and I'm sure has 10 times the amount of software listed in it. And they do a fantastic job of giving you alternative twos that did, you know, other types of software. So all I did was I went to alternative2.net. I typed in pfSense. I scrolled down. You can pick what platform you want. You can pick what license you want. Scroll down. You can see all the different things you can use from OPN Sense, IP, Fire, Clear OS, Sophos UVM, Zero Shell, Libre Mesh, IP Cop, Untangle, and it keeps going on and on and on because Alternative 2 does its best to give you the information you want instead of worrying about how to advertise their stuff and market you to customers.
I troll Alternative 2 a lot when I'm thinking about, all right, is there a better way to do this? Can I do this in an ARM processor as opposed to an Intel processor and going through those things? And I guess that's where I'm kind of mad at pfSense. I can't be mad at them that they have an open source Intel product, but I guess that they have I don't think it's open source. I believe it's a closed source ARM product where they want to sell you the hardware.
Yeah, I will say their ARM stuff is not, and I believe it's because they only support one kind of chip is their excuse. I will say I am putting 2 links in the note. One of them I don't know if we really need to talk about, but we did talk about Linus Torvalds complaining about why ARM is not winning right now in the server space, and it's because it's hard for developers to develop for ARM when you're programming on x86, which I think is a very valid point. But line 914 in the notes, my belief is he said that basically stirring the pot to try to get people to get off their butt and do that and try to develop a tool where people can use. So it's been less than a month and a half since he said that. And now it says Docker developers can now build ARM containers on their desktop. They basically implemented a system where on an x86 system using the Docker container designer basically tool, you basically click one button and then you can make it for ARM. So it's becoming easier for them to build on ARM.
Very cool. And if you go out there and look, you know, search through Docker for ARM-based stuff, you're going to have a subset, you know, a much smaller subset of what's out there that's available for ARM.
Yeah, and I'll say, to a degree, you almost should, because not everything written for x86, I'll say should, in this time in 2019, should be ran on ARM. But those lines will start to get blurred. I want to talk about 915 really quick, because We have Intel-based single board computers slowly gaining ground, slowly becoming more popular. This to me is the kind of thing where if it really happens how I think it could happen, we could see a drastic shift in Intel single board computers. And basically, Intel announced that their dedicated GPUs that are coming out here, I want to say the end of this year, they're going to support hardware ray tracing accelerations on their GPUs.
That's cool.
Yeah, I don't know if you guys know exactly what ray tracing is. I kind of have an idea.
Oh, I do.
Oh, yeah.
Ray tracing. I was doing it back in the Amiga days.
Yeah, the impression I get is ray tracing is basically using mathematical equations. So when your virtual camera in the game is looking at something, it's basically tracing everything as if it was light coming into the focal point of the camera in the game or the screen that you're looking at. So it doesn't have to compute everything else that's not being seen. But because of that, it can give you a much higher resolution and details at what you're looking at in the screen. And doing it all strictly in hardware means the software, basically, they don't have to write each line of code for this to happen. So it's the kind of thing that can help innovate graphics in such a way it becomes easier for the person implementing it to have fantastic looking graphics, and they not necessarily know how to do fantastic graphics.
Yeah, that was a big breakthrough. I forget what the 3D ray tracing software was I used on the Amiga, but the one version computed everything in the environment. And then the big breakthrough in ray tracing, and we're talking 20, 30 years ago, was that it did it in reverse, because there were things that it was rendering that were never seen by the camera. So instead of calculating what goes into the camera lens, they started doing it backwards, figuring out what rays coming out of the camera are going to hit something visible and render that only. And the thing that you would do back then was set up render farms. So if you were going to render a 100-frame animation, what you would do is you would...
Bumper hesitation because I'm dual recording. And on the other computer should be fine.
Oh, okay, good.
Yeah, I will say it isn't that I don't want smart plugs, Rich. It isn't that I don't want smart plugs. I don't have a need for anything smart. I have light switches. I just walk by and flip the light switch. I got, washer and dryers. I just walk by and flick a button. When I steam eggs, I just walk by and press a button. The only place where I literally might hook something up to, it's literally the garage door. Only because if my son comes home from school and says, I forgot my key, I would love to be able to SSH into my network and then remotely click a virtual button, have my Raspberry Pi, then tell the garage door to open up. That's the one instance I can see I would like to have it.
I don't know if I mentioned it, but I have the garage door set up with a Sonoff SV. And it was funny, my wife and daughter and I came back from the movies. We just pulled into the garage, and at 9:55 p.m., I have the garage door auto-close if it's open. So we just pulled into the garage, and then the garage door starts closing. It's like, what the heck? And I'm like, I know what happened.
Gotcha.
So there's a couple of things I have happen on my network automatically. The garage door closing at 9:55, the alarm sets at 10 o'clock. And sometime, I don't know if it's like 9:30 at night, I have my laser printer go off if it was on. So, because sometimes they leave it on, I'll come home, it's been on for a week and nobody's used it. They printed one page. So I make sure that it auto turns off.
Gotcha. Yeah. I won't even have a physical paper printer in my house anymore.
Wow. Good for you, man.
Well, it's just because they cost too much.
Yep.
Unless it's a laser printer, the toner will dry up and clog the head. And then you got to take it out and perform minimal invasive surgery with alcohol to clean it out. And then you got to go buy another $50, $60, $70, $80, $90 print cartridge so they can print one more page that they're not going to use again for 6 months.
Yep. Oh, yeah. That's what I've been saying for years is you're better off if you need a color print, getting an 8x10 photograph printed at Genevieve, CVS, or whatever.
Gotcha.
One of the things, and on the lazy end that I want to do, my wife got a bonus and got custom closets done. And what I'd like to do is put magnetic reed switches on the doors for the closets and have a sewn-off SV or a sewn-off whatever read the magnetic reed switch. And when it sees that, the door opens, turn the lights on in the closet.
Yeah, that was one of the things that they unsuccessfully demoed on the Mozilla Web Things live demo, because it was live. She said, I'm literally opening this up for the first time. And of course, whenever you try to live demo tech, you're going to have a certain amount of failure just because it's a computer. But yeah, there are certain, like, I would see, but like, even if I want, like, in the kitchen accent type lights, I have no problem just walking by and flipping a button. I do like the idea of having softer lights on all night, or ambient type lights on all night, just in case someone gets up, they can see. But basically, the wife only ever gets up, goes to the bathroom. As far as I know, she never comes downstairs. The kids never leave their rooms, and I'm fine. I never leave the room in the middle of the night kind of thing. So it's just the kind of thing, I don't want to say it would be an excess thing right now, but I don't actually think there's any need for any home automation whatsoever. In fact, I just got a free Google Home Mini because I'm a Google Drive paid subscriber. I'm not even going to take the Home Mini out of the box. I'm just going to give it away on the Android show, because I still can't find anybody to tell me anything that I cannot do on my phone that you can only do on a Google Home Mini. And my wife has a Google phone. My son has a Google phone. My youngest son has an Android tablet. So if they want to talk to their devices, they can.
Okay, so the only thing you can do on a Google Home hockey puck is you can ask it to find your phone for you.
I do that all the time.
I don't need to. I always know where my phone is.
But other people don't know where their phone is.
You know what I do? I have a Chrome TV on multiple TVs, and so I use the Mini to turn my TVs off and on. Because the kids, gotcha. You know, they play the video games. They don't know when to stop. And so it's easier for me to say, okay, you know who, shut off the TV. Oh, Dad, you're so not fair.
And that's another thing I do like about it. And I think you bring up another kind of can of worms, is like useful tech and what's it good for. I like the ability to have G turn on the TV, because if by the time I find the remote and the TV, you know, warms up, however long that takes, not like it's a big hardship. It's nicer to have it turn on with the Chromecast in Google Home than me find the remote and turn on. I can tell it, turn on and play this, and it'll pretty much already be there. Now, I do like to switch over to another device like a Roku, because if I want to go forward 10 seconds, 30 seconds, a minute, or pause it, it's just easier to do by pushing a button.
You can do that with your voice, too, if you're watching something on YouTube or Netflix.
Yeah, you can say, you can tell it, you know, okay, you know, go forward 10 seconds, 30 seconds. You can do that. But I like pushing a button better.
Right. Well, I'll say, Rich, I don't need a Google Home Mini to find my device. On all Android devices,
I'm not saying who in my family needs it.
No. Ever since Android 4.0, on any Android device, you can set up multiple profiles. Think of it as logging in and logging out of a computer as different users. To where I have on my wife's phone, my son's phone, and my other son's Android tablet, my profile loaded onto it. They have no access to any of my data, any of my contacts, anything. But on any of those devices, I can simply swipe down, switch the profile, log in as me, and then do a find my device on my phone. So I always have ways to find my device. I don't need, and I'll say I don't watch any TV. I have much more important things I consider in my life to do than to sit down and watch Hollywood style content of like any sort, whether it be Oprah or a Marvel movie.
Let's back up for a minute, Dora. You said you can take any one of those devices, swipe down, choose your profile, and locate your device.
Yep. On any Android device, basically, if you scroll down, you should see a picture of a head on anything like 4.4 or up. It's either on a head, or you have to sometime actually click on the gear up top and then go to it. And then basically what it does is it logs out the current user. You can have multiple accounts on the phone. Some people use one for work, one for home. I, on all my family's devices, I log in with one of my accounts just so I'm sure I always have access to those devices.
And that's not easier than saying, hey, find my phone?
Oh, it's much easier because I can do it anywhere. I don't have to be at home in my kitchen. I can do it when I'm at the when I'm at the mall. I can do it when I'm on vacation. I can do it when I'm at a park, because I've had to do it before.
Yeah, I know. That helps. Absolutely.
But nobody else in my home has an Android phone.
That sounds like a personal problem.
Yes, it does.
I tell everybody at my house, you can get whatever you want. Don't ever ask me a question. Don't ever, ever
ask I love me that. A question. I love being ignorant.
Yeah, but and I'll say this. The only other thing I could see a home mini or one of the home appliances being good for is to play music. But I got no problem in saying nobody in my family wants to hear any music I listen to. Nobody else in the family wants to hear the type of music that my wife wants to listen to, and it goes down the line.
The main use for my hockey puck is I play music for the bird.
That's pretty cool.
I keep it next to his cage, and I play classical music for the bird. For years, I had one of my older phones next to the bird cage, and that's what I would use it for.
The kids leave on lights all around the house, so I use the automation to turn off lights when they've left them on. And I don't like walking up and downstairs, so if I'm upstairs, I really don't want to go downstairs and turn the lights off.
I will say, Brian, I ain't gonna lie, that would be nice. That'd be really nice. I did, though, go out of my way to replace every light in the house with a cost-efficient bulb. So even if they leave it on for 8 hours, I'm paying, I figured it was something like 8 cents. Right. It was something I can literally charge them for, kind of thing. And I really do honestly enjoy having my kids go back up the stairs and turn the lights off themselves. There's a little bit of joy that happens there.
Yes, there is. Yeah. But there's a fine line between joy and punishment from their whining and complaining at times.
Oh, yeah. I was going to say, when it comes to parenting and marriage or spousal thing, the number one rule, pick your battles, because you can't win every battle or you will die.
Yeah, that's true.
So I have a faux skylight, and there's fluorescent bulbs there surrounding it. And that's nice when you're using the room, gives you a nice light. But I also have LED strips there that are completely controlled by the home automation controller, my home automation assistant. And where I live, if there's no full moon, there is no chance you're getting through my house without banging into something. And I do have night lights all over. So the faux skylight, which I have in my quote-unquote dining room, which my wife wants to change where my dining room is, it really is like the sitting room, but we use it as a dining room. And so that's really nice because, one, it allows me to get from my office to my bedroom without banging into something. I can turn on the lights in my bedroom before I get there so I can actually see what I'm doing. And I can turn off that faux skylight when I get to the bedroom. Because even if there was a switch, it wouldn't be anywhere near my bedroom. So those are things. But then again, if you didn't live in the remote dark place in Palm Beach that I do, you wouldn't have those issues either.
Yeah, and I have no problem saying, no hesitation whatsoever. If I was a bachelor, yes, I would have home automation throughout the house. I want it to, when I walk in a room, a motion sensor would notice, light would come on, TV would come on or whatever, and I would exit the room, no motion for X amount of time, everything would turn off. I would have a lot of it. But because, you know, the whole family thing, it's like, no matter what I do, I know it's going to end in, you know, something not right, endless tweaking. So I really don't have the vitriol to push it through, if you will. If this was a birthing, I would just say, just cut me and do a C-section.
I think that's, you kind of made a good point, Dory. It's kind of like with managing your own video content. After a while, you become an admin, and you're spending kind of more time administrating what you've put together than actually enjoying it.
Yeah, so I think the good side of something like Plex, sonar, radar, transmission working together is you say, hey, I like that series, download every episode of it and the new ones when they come out. And when it's zero effort after that, it's fantastic. But just like I had a hard drive go on my HC1 and my primary role for the HC1 is Plex server, that was a real effing for me to... I had to buy a new drive and set it up and spend a number of hours doing it.
Yeah.
And the reason I have a Plex server mainly is because depending on the content that you play on Netflix, some content after only a couple of episodes will say, hey, are you still watching, and stop playing. All I want is something I'm familiar with playing in the background while I'm sleeping that I don't have to pay too much attention to because I'm not that interested in it. But it's enough to keep me from being in my own head, which would keep me up at night.
Well, you could always go to YouTube and play a 10-hour video of bacon pancakes.
Well, so the problem with that is a series I know the content already, and especially a series I've watched many, many times. I know every episode, all of the content. So it's known to me, and I don't have to be too interested in it. Interested enough to stay up.
Well, that's the beauty of bacon pancakes. It's literally just a 10-hour loop of making pancakes, making bacon pancakes, bacon pancakes, making bacon pancakes. You put the bacon in the pancakes, bacon pancakes, and then it starts over again for 10 straight hours. We did a multi-hour trip with me and just the two kids. I literally put it on and I left it on for like 2 hours.
That's torture.
Oh my gosh.
And I let them know they can never be more annoying than me. So don't ever test me, kind of thing. But now, seriously,
is that the role of the dad? Because I got that one. I got the crown. I am like king of that.
Well, I mean, okay. The second a kid comes into your life, it's trying to train you. Don't let anybody fool you. They're trying to train you because they want it to do as little as possible. They want you to do as much as possible. So you got to set the ground rules hard and quick, or else you're going to get all walked over, in my opinion. I got to bring back just a little bit more tech. And I want to say, yes, line 964 in the notes. This is the kind of thing I really do like.
There is no line 964.
904. I'm blind as a bat, Rich. 904 in the notes. And what it basically is, we have the RK 3399 chip right now, which is one of the better chips, is what I'm going to say. There's a couple other chips that definitely compete for that title of, right now, best rock chip in the market. ARM is not slowing down. The people making ARM chips are not slowing down, and the rock people are not slowing down whatsoever. They announced a 8-nanometer octa-core RK3588 chip, which is basically going to nearly double potential speed of the 3399, and looking through like press releases and trusted journalists who've been covering ARM for years, when they say they are going to reach certain numbers, typically when it comes to ROC, they almost always meet those numbers. So there's little doubt in my mind this time next year or about, we're going to be talking about this ROC chip, RK3588, and how it's quite impressive for the price and quite fast. Because the other thing is, then nanometer, the way I try to relate nanometer to real world performance is, the smaller the nanometer, the smaller the chip. The smaller the chip, the quicker it is to do every single little thing, and the less heat it produces, so the less power it needs. So yes, you literally get the more performance and more power with less heat and less electricity flowing through the processor, thus enabling even smarter, smaller home appliance type solutions. So this is the kind of stuff where I really do love to hear.
I do too. And I'm wondering with the NPU on this processor, if this would line up good with virtual reality. I'm wondering if that would be a good use for this chip.
Yeah, huh?
Well, see, I will say this. When it mentions the stuff like 8K, it can only help. Steam, Valve just announced their Index headset today, which is basically 4K in each eyeball with 120 refresh rate. And of course, the hardware costs $1,000. Being able to pump 8K out is a great step towards augmented reality and virtual reality type performance. I think what the other question is how high of a refresh rate it can do, which I don't know if they're going to be able to tell you. You'll always get better virtual reality out of x86 processors for now. I honestly don't expect that to change for at least 3 or 4 years at the best case scenario, but I can see ARM things starting to become much more competitive in that arena for one main reason. Instead of having a desktop computer, you know, chugging down 100 watts of juice to do it, you literally might be able to have wearable, smaller ARM-based computers doing the exact same thing. So I think it will happen. I don't know if this is the chip to do it, but I do think we're at least starting to talk about it.
Well, I know that the current chips that have NPU built in to the chipset provide a good performance boost and facial recognition. So when you want to do facial recognition with your home audio automation system, you can actually do that in hardware on the chip itself instead of doing it through software, which is obviously, as we know, much quicker.
Absolutely.
Ooh, and if we're done with this, I'm kind of excited. I haven't been home in 2 weeks, but when I get home, I'm going to have the ESP32 cam chips there. And so that's a board with a little, you know, postage stamp size board that does Wi-Fi with a camera on it. And it is supposed to do some, I would say, super low-end facial recognition.
How much do those cost?
I'm kind of excited. When you get them from AliExpress, I think they're like $7 or $8.
I remember talking about that. I forgot all about those.
Yeah, I'll just put it like this. I have no secret insider knowledge whatsoever. Only do facial recognition on anything if you're absolutely okay with it being spoofed, is all I'm saying. Without extremely high-end hardware and extremely smart software, it is extremely easy to spoof any facial recognition, anything, is what I'll say. There was a posting on Hackaday where the guy showed you basically just hang a picture around your neck, and it was literally down by his belly button, and no software could identify he was a person. We have machine learning AI BS right now running rampant. What people don't understand is while these systems might be very good at one task, one very monumentally small task, they have absolutely no general knowledge. So they're unbelievably easy to circumvent or to manipulate because we're humans and, you know, we're like really good at that.
So really what I'd like to do with this is I would like to have one at my gate looking at license plates and doing license plate reading so I can see vehicles coming on my property and knowing if it's like, hey, this is a vehicle, you know, myself, my wife or my daughter driving or my in-laws driving
or somebody else. I love the idea of reading tags just because people aren't expecting it.
Exactly.
Right. Right. You know, I know, hey, the landscapers are here, UPS, the mailman or whatever, or, you know, just simply like known vehicle is on property or unknown vehicles on the property. And then I know ideally it would happen automatically that I get texted a picture, but I could go and log into my camera and see what's going on. And the same thing about people. Known people are on the property. I really don't care. It's somebody I expect. Unknown people are on the property. You know, maybe I'm getting a delivery and I can tell somebody, hey, I'm not home, but bring that in. It's going to rain. You know, that kind of thing. Or, you know, it could be worst case scenario. You know, a wolf is running around on my property.
Gotcha. Or an alligator. Gotcha. There's one link I really want to mention, and this is strictly for 5150. And it is line 901 in the notes, makers.snips.ai, and I promise this has nothing to do with vasectomies. makers.snips.ai. Basically, this is home automation strictly via audio. Okay. So this is an infrastructure that allows you to do voice automation all the processing again is done on the device. You can personalize the wake word. It's completely open source. It does work completely disconnected from every other network, and it's completely customizable. This is more along the lines of a trainable system. So you would literally have to record your voice X number of times, or at least give it samples of your voice X number of times. And then you can have personalized commands, almost like the Harman remote systems, where you can pre-program watch cable. And then you press a set of buttons, and then all you got to do is tell it once to watch cable, and it will turn on the TV, turn on the cable box, turn on the receiver, turn on the correct lightings, change your TV to the right cinema mode, turn the right input to the right cable box mode, and have it all set up in one command. Same kind of principle of automation, but via a voice. 50's been big on wanting voice assistance in his house. It does work on a Raspberry Pi, so you can basically load it up on a Raspberry Pi, or you can, I believe they have a customizable kit you can buy as well if you want to really support them. And it does seem like it is moderately supported by a community. That, to me, is one of the bigger things about this. You can buy the Snips Seed, S-E-E-E-D, development kit from them, which includes, looks like, two boards, two Raspberry Pis, two mics, two speakers, two batteries. Trying to see if I can get the price here. $115 ain't cheap. Or you can literally just load it on a Raspberry Pi and away you go. I'm just a fan of choice and I like competition. So hopefully this is the kind of thing that can actually stay around and make some progress.
Cool. Yeah, I got to put that on my list on things to run on the Pi and see how it works.
Well, and I still have these little tiny. Oh, let me change the
camera. Is that a microphone?
Yeah, that's the thing. It's a super tiny micro, basically USB sized microphone. And it just basically slips in the device and allows you to have a smaller microphone. I've never plugged one of these things up yet. I literally bought like a 3-pack for like $9 like a year ago. So I really have to at least try them once. And I haven't done that yet.
So I test drove. I don't know if I did it on a Pi or I did it on an Orange Pi something. I think I did it on an Orange Pi Zero, maybe, and that was probably where I went wrong. You can run both Google Assistant and Amazon Alexa on the same Pi device, but it just didn't work really well. And I don't know if it was my audio quality or both running on a low power machine or all of those combinations.
Well, all of those combinations, and you technically aren't running authentic Google Home or authentic Amazon Echo, Alexa, whatever. You're running development environments of them, which does give you a touch more functionality, but you also, my belief is you're literally put in a slower chain when you try to do things that have to connect to their servers and services. Okay. There's honestly, we haven't done a show in 2 weeks in a typical fashion. We still have seemingly 20 plus links in the notes. I don't know if there's anything there you guys saw that you thought was something that we like had to talk about.
Okay. Just for the heck of it, 887 Western Digital has unveiled micro SD card flash cards for video cameras, sustained 3000 write cycles, blah, 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 256 gig. That's pretty freaking huge.
Well, the gimmick is they're not only 256 gig, but they can withstand a lot read write cycle, because that's one of the things. The normal SD card read write cycle, I believe, is only 1,000 or might be 10,000, and these supposedly can withstand 100,000 read write cycles. And I thought I saw a expected price. It might not have been on this one. Might not have been on this link. They were not cheap. They were literally like $400.
Okay, if it's way up there, then it's not worth talking about.
Well, it is, but not for us. It's more of an industrial grade kind of thing. Yeah, and one of the things says it's a micro SD card, 15 millimeter, 11 by 1, of course. Class 10 speeds is 10 megasecond, while U3 is 30 megasecond. These are equivalent to Samsung EUFS cards, which is basically the next generation micro SD cards, the best way to think about it. These can operate up to 1,000 megabytes a second on the high end. So not only do these things have an insane read-write number that they can withstand, but they're essentially 10 times faster than your standard micro SD card. So when these things cost a lot of money, there's a reason why these things cost a lot of money. But the good thing is, let the businesses buy these a lot, because the more they buy, the quicker the price will come down for us to buy. Highlighting that one, making sure we get that one in the notes. I will say, I like having too many links for the show, because then I'm a firm believer we only like bring the best things to the show. With that said, I'm sure there's still like 4 or 5 links we could definitely bring up and talk about. But the good thing is if they're really that good, my logic is we'll bring them back on another show. Is there anything you guys wanted to end off with?
I actually got a question about the snippets link that you mentioned. It looks like you're able to build your own outlets. Is that accurate?
You mean like power outlets?
Yeah, like with the kit there, because it doesn't look like it provides outlets that's functioning with it or you can use with it. But it looks like you can build your own.
Well, their kit is basically like, it looks like a base backboard and then a mounting brackets for the Raspberry Pi, the speaker, the microphone, and the battery. You're still going to like have separate power, because if you take a look at the picture, they don't even show, you know, it's like the power coming into it. So it's basically just like a wall mountable, I would say, plate, but you're still going to have to like, get the power there yourself for it. And this is really just for convenience sake. You can buy everything yourself. I'm sure it costs less than half the money and it just won't look as nice.
Right. Well, I was just wondering. Jolly good.
Very cool. Very cool. I will say, as always, if you guys want to send us an email, do not hesitate to send us an email. I'm going to try to guess it. I never get it right. I'm going to say minipc@podnuts.com is the email address. Just shoot us an email. Again, if I don't reply back to you immediately, that just means the email is so good, I'm making sure it's remaining unread so I see it during the next episode. That's my excuse. You can't prove me wrong. Brian, if people want to catch up with you, is there a best way to?
I'm actually over at Instagram. That's the Cable Guy over at Instagram. Or if you want to send us an email, you can send an email to Podnuts, and we'll surely respond.
Gotcha, gotcha. If there's a direct link to your profile on Instagram, do me a favor, shoot it to me, and I'll make sure it's in the notes.
All right, I'll do that.
Hey, Rich, what's the easiest way for people to catch up with you? I'm going to guess you need to go on Facebook, right?
No, MySpace. MySpace. Flying Rich.
Friendster?
Friendster. Yeah, so flyingrich.com. There's a contact me page or contact us page on flyingrich.com, and all of my social media is there, so you can see stuff I do, where I've been, what I've seen, and all that kind of fun stuff. And the video of Dor and I from last night, not doing anything good. Or, I mean, not doing anything bad. Did I say that right?
Yeah, you did, sure. I'm tempted to put up a Gopher server and tell people to meet me there. You know, just because. Don't forget, send us an email if you want. You can send us a voicemail too, 7076-PODNUT. Or if you want to, just send us an audio clip, and I can play them on the show. Thank everyone for their support. I thank everyone who helped support Eric's family. Thank you very much. We will definitely talk to everyone again real soon. Until next time, take it easy.
This is Martin from Podnuts Pro. Thank you so much for choosing this podcast to be in your ears right now. Don't forget to support all the other Podnuts shows on the Podnuts Network. And we cannot do this without you. So please, if you have any questions, comments, concerns, email us at podnutspro@podnuts.com.